This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Alexandra Zagbayou had to grow up quickly. As a child, she fled with her family from the Ivory Coast to Raleigh, North Carolina. The family feared political persecution in the tense years before the country's civil war. Later, her parents returned to Africa while she and her sister stayed in Raleigh with their uncle. A few years after that, he was killed. With her older sister as her primary guardian, Alexandra finished high school and college. She now helps run a Durham-based college access organization called Student U. It helps students along their own educational journeys and often in spite of diverse challenges. Alexandra Zagbayou is a high school program director at Student U, and she joins us now. Alexandra, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Actually, you were born in Montreal, right?
I am a Canadian citizen.
Wow. And so you weren't there very long, though.
I was not. I left Canada when I was 4 going on 5. My mother is from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and my father is from the Ivory Coast. They met in college in Canada, which is why I hold a Canadian passport.
Any memories of Montreal?
I remember my one vivid memory is my mom trying to stuff me into a red winter suit to go outside in order to play in the snow, all things that I would never do at this point in my life. I hate being cold, but that is my memory of Canada.
Just being cold. Well, it's a pretty city if you ever get back.
But my sister lives there now, so I'll be there soon.
It's awfully cold. From there, you moved to the Ivory Coast and spent a good – so tell us about that and growing up in –
I love the Ivory Coast. I moved there when I was 4 going on 5 again. And I remember my first vivid memories, a huge birthday party because I turned 5 in September. And I thought the party was for me, but I think it was like a welcome home party. And my parents just dubbed it as my birthday party. But what I loved about the Ivory Coast, I think the culture was very different. I think I recognized that than what it was like growing up in Canada. I loved being close to family. So my dad is from the Ivory Coast and we're very close. So I remember that vividly. It was also for a long time just my dad, my mom, and my older sister. So we were a tight family of 4. Yeah. The weather's great. There's no snow. It's warm or it rains. That's easy to deal with. School was great. I mean, I loved the Ivory Coast. It has a very special place in my heart. And even though I've now lived in the U.S. longer than I lived in the Ivory Coast, I still consider it home.
Your father have a big family there? Was there much of an extended family?
So my dad is 1 of 8. Yeah. And I think probably at this point, the average family size on both my mom and dad's side is like 7 kids. So he had 8 siblings and all of them had a lot of children. So I have a lot of cousins and they were very much a huge part of my growing up.
Both of them were scholars, academics, right?
Yes. So my dad went to school for biomedical engineering in Canada, and my mom is an economist, so both of them were educated abroad and had a tight group of friends, and I believe they all met in Canada and were educated there and then all went back to the Ivory Coast, and that was a huge part of our upbringing, being around those people and listening to my parents talk about politics and talk about their hopes and dreams for the Ivory Coast and the role that they saw their children playing. So that was a huge part of our life, and seeing my dad be a mentor to younger people in his work office, I think always mattered deeply to me. I think when I was younger, I didn't really understand why there were so many young people in our house. But now I understand that my dad, I think, just had a heart to be generous and recognize that he was incredibly blessed and had really great experience and wanted to be a support system for other young people in the Ivory Coast who wanted to go to college abroad and who wanted to change their circumstance and that of their family. So that was a huge part of my upbringing.
What brought them back? You know, we hear so much about people who get an education like your parents did, but they come to places like Canada or the U.S., and they don't go back. So why did they go back?
So back in the day, a lot of African governments would send their brightest students abroad on scholarships. And one of the stipulations was that you had to come home and work. And so I think for my dad, especially being a close family man, there was never a thought that he would stay in Canada. He had really great friends, but I think it was very much a temporary situation. My dad was also the first one, when he went to school, most of his friends were petroleum engineers, and my dad did biomedical engineering, which at the time, I think in the 80s, was an up-and-coming field, but there weren't a lot of biomedical engineers. And so just his skill set was very much so needed. And so he found the space to do the work he wanted to do back home. And he actually worked at the university and helped develop a biomedical engineering program. And so I think my dad very much understood that he was really fortunate, and that mattered to him that he went home and was able to create similar paths for other students and to create, you know, a body, a class of educated Ivorians who would come home and solve their own issues.
Yeah, I mean, because really, if you think about it, you said it was an up-and-coming profession. Certainly, he could have made a pretty good living and a very comfortable living here or in Canada with that kind of talent.
That's very true. And even when we relocated here to the U.S. in the early 2000s, he again went home. I think his heart is at home for himself, and I think also wanted us as children to have the experience of being home and being raised in that culture, and not forgetting that even if we at the end of the day chose to be elsewhere. At this time, my father has two children who live abroad. I think in his dream, we will all return home at some point. He's been very generous to not pressure us to come home. But I know that if I give him 10 years, then I think the conversations will change. When are you coming home? There are children here who could use your skill set. And interestingly enough, my younger brother has had those conversations with me. And I'm like, I'm not ready yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day. So I think his heart is at home.
He is a good parent. He's working on you subtly now. He just knows how to get around you.
I know.
Why don't you say that? But you did, the family did have to leave at one point. Mm-hmm. What was going on?
So I remember coming home from a birthday party in fifth grade. I even remember what I had on. I had on a red dress with flowers, a white shirt, my hair had braids, it was tied to the side. And we got home and the house was really dark, and my mom sat me down on the bed with my older sister and my two younger brothers. They were quite young, and told us, "This is happening. Seems like there had been a big case of embezzlement in the Ivory Coast. Large amounts of dollars had been taken by people who worked for the government. My dad had worked for the government 5 years prior to that incident, but had then stopped and had been working in consulting. And a lot of people who he had worked with had been taken to jail and then were found supposedly having committed suicide. And the thoughts were that people were being taken to jail and used as scapegoats and then killed in prison. And I was 10. So that was really traumatic to hear that your family's in that situation. And my mom told us that my dad had left, that he had taken his car and was driving through the night and was going to fly out of Accra to come to the United States, and that we were all going to leave short periods of time separately so that no one would follow us. We often would go on vacation, and so us leaving was not uncommon. It was the summertime, but all of us leaving at the same time would have been different because our parents usually just sent us by ourselves. And so that was the beginning of, I guess, my life now, right? I didn't anticipate at the time that America would be my home. The goal was that we would be here until the instability stopped, and then we would go back home. And that was 15 years ago. I think I got here June 30th, 1999. So that celebration, I guess, is coming up. Well, it would be 15 years this summer.
I'm talking with the director, the program director at Student U, the high school program director at Student U, on the state of things. Alexandra Zagbayu is my guest. How did you feel? Were you afraid when you had to leave? What was going through your mind?
Yeah, I think I was afraid. I think that was the first. Until that moment, I don't think I ever felt unsafe in my life or felt uncertain of the next step. I was really fortunate to have a family upbringing that was really stable, and I always knew what was coming up around the corner if we were traveling. And that was the first time where it was very clear that even my parents were unsure of the next step. And I think, you know, as children, your parents are superheroes and they know everything. And it was the first time where I could look into my mother's eye and know that she herself was afraid. And that's probably why I remember that day so vividly. I was really afraid and nervous, but I felt as though once we got to the U.S., things would be better, that we would be we would be safe at least, and then we would figure everything out. And I think our parents thought it would be a summer. We would be in the U.S. for a summer, and then that summer quickly turned into 15 years. So wow. It has changed drastically. But I do remember being afraid, but also I felt like my parents would make the best decision for us as a family and trusted that, even though in that moment I could tell that my mom was really concerned.
We'll talk about where you went when you came to the United States and what happened in the 15 years since, when my conversation with Alexandra Zagbayou continues. Alexandra is the high school program director at a Durham-based college access program called Student U. Listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Our conversation continues in a moment. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, talking with Alexandra Zagbayou, high school program director for the Durham-based College Access Project Student U. We talked about your having to come to the United States. Did you pretty much come directly to Raleigh?
We did. So my mom's younger brother lived in Raleigh, and we had traveled to the U.S. before for vacation. So we stopped in New York for a couple of days and then came down to North Carolina and stayed here.
What kind of work was your mom doing, both in the Ivory Coast, and then was she working when she came here?
Mm-hmm. So in the Ivory Coast, my mom was a project manager. So she went to school for economics and worked with the branch of the government that built roads and did infrastructure development and was a project developer for them. When we moved to North Carolina, my mom worked for NC State, actually, and so did my dad. I honestly don't know exactly what the specifics of their jobs were. They were here for a very short period of time, but that's where they were employed.
And they did return, right?
They did return. So in the summer of 2001, my family returned to the Ivory Coast. My mother became ill when I was in the eighth grade, stress-induced, and it was a really difficult time in our family. And I think being estranged from family and being in a new environment, the pressure of having a large family in the United States, I think for all of those reasons, my family decided to return home. And so my older sister and I stayed. She was starting her freshman year at NC State, and I was about to start high school, and I think our life plans, based on our parents' perspective, were that we were going to be educated abroad anyways, and so they just decided that it made sense for us to stay. So we stayed, and they went home.
And before that, before they went home, you could have gone into honors classes. Tell us about your high school experience, because you weren't speaking English,
right? So my middle school experience was fascinating. So here I was doing really well back home. My family's expectation is that academics first, always. Then I traveled to the U.S. And I think in my mind, I never really thought about, you're moving to America. You don't speak English. This is actually might be a problem at some point. And then my parents enrolled me in school. They put me in an ESL program at Apex High. And I remember coming home and speaking Spanish to my mom. And like, I love Spanish. It's great. It's a beautiful language. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of that class was to teach me how to speak English. And the teacher was amazing. Just my classmates spoke Spanish. And so during lunch, they spoke Spanish. And in downtime, they spoke Spanish. And I picked up Spanish. And my parents thought, well, this is not going to be very efficient for us. And so they pulled me out of that program. And I went to Martin Middle School and took classes in English all day. My parents were, I think, they're really intelligent. They put me in French classes. I think I may have had more than one French class. And while my peers were learning the English, the French version of things, I was memorizing the English equivalent of things.
That's great, yeah.
And then I would go home and my mom would help me do my homework. So both of my parents are fully bilingual. So my mom would translate my homework into French. I would do my homework in French and then we would translate it together back into English so that I could practice. And then I would go to school and really oftentimes like couldn't comprehend anything that I was saying or that was happening around me. But I was there all day and then I would go home and help do my homework. But I remember, back to your question, I remember my mom repeatedly advocating for me to be put into more demanding classes. And I could see how that would seem preposterous. Your daughter doesn't speak English. I don't understand why you're asking for her to be put into an honors English class or math class. And my mom was adamant that math was the universal language and it didn't matter that I didn't speak English. But I could do mathematical equations really well and should therefore be put in higher level classes. But again, I think, again, that's from an early stage in life, recognizing how much agency my parents had to understand the system, to know that she could go to school and advocate for that, that she could show that my grades said that I was ready for that change. And I think my English was a problem for probably about 3 months. Like I remember in January of my sixth grade year, I was fine. My mom was no longer doing my homework. I was doing it by myself. And again, recognizing that the incredible amount of agency and privilege that I had parents who were bilingual who could do that for me. And my mom didn't work those first couple of months. Yeah. And so supporting me through that process was her priority in ways that other children who may be in my situation just didn't have that opportunity. And so I think probably then again are the beginnings of my interest in education and even that of others before that.
Well, and you think about how cool it is to sort of retro-engineer the language. I mean, immersion, of course, is a great way to learn a language, but you don't always get the structure. But the idea of learning French to understand how the English works, so you're getting both the structure and the practical application.
Right.
But getting back to the fact that your mother had the time, she also had a university education, so she understands the value of education and of advocating because she's got this education. I mean, all those things, you know, we read, I mean, there's so much data now on kids, particularly from low-wealth neighborhoods, being kind of mischanneled right from the start, owing to some of the same markers that you had. Well, you don't speak English or you don't speak it the way the teacher expects. And they end up in classes that are way beneath what every expectation should be. But without the advocacy, without people with the time or that kind of experience, you know, then think about how they kind of remain in those channels.
It's really important. I think that a big part of our work, and we think about working with our students, is also working with their families. And, you know, we work for an organization where our students are here because their parents want them to succeed. They apply to get into Student U. They fill out a 13-page application. They bring their children to an interview. They want their children to go to college. And so part of that education for their children and for their family is to say advocating for your child is really important, and we can support you through that process, and setting up parent-teacher conferences, and for us to be able to support them and looking over report cards and saying, like, okay, your student is making straight A's in his regular academic classes. Next year we want to move him to an honors class. We're going to try one and see how they do. And then once we try one, then, okay, you can take a full load of honors classes. Next year, we're going to try AP class. And sometimes our students are reluctant and say, no, like, I'm fine, I'm making straight A's. But a part of that is also recognizing that you might experience some failures as you challenge yourself more. And that's okay. We're going to be here to support you through that process. But you have the potential to make really good grades in the honors class. And you deserve that. You deserve to be more academically challenged because you have the capacity to do so. And we believe that you can do it, and we're going to support you. And I think my parents being there for me were able to support me through that process to say, yes, maybe taking an honors English class when you don't speak English might be really difficult, but I'm home with you and I'm going to support you through that process and make sure that you have the skills and the support you need to be able to thrive in that environment, which is so important. And we know matters for students and families when it comes to your education.
Well, and let's just spotlight this moment for a second longer, the difference between the parents who you meet who advocate for their children. They want them to have the best. They come to Student U and apply because they know that education is important. They get that it's important and they want to support, and they'll give you the time. They don't have the experience. Your parents did. They know what a college education expects. They understand that. And if you come home with the homework, that might be a little difficult. They've been through that process. Mm-hmm. They can help you, right? They've got the resources. So the difference is experience. Mm-hmm. And I guess Student U applies, has the experience that your parents had. And, of course, the desire comes from parents in those neighborhoods now who come to you and say, help my child.
For sure. And I think our goal has always been, Student U, we're not there to become the surrogate parent of our students. Right. We're here to support our families, support their children. And so we're doing more work and thinking about parent education. How do we create spaces where we can share all that information with parents from the beginning so they can do that at home with their children, right? So they feel empowered in those moments. My dream would be that we just have these trainings and workshops, and then our parents are not only able to do it for themselves, but also for their neighbors and for their cousins, right? Where they can say, like, oh, I went to a meeting today with so-and-so because of this, and this didn't make sense. Because I think it's really important to create situations where parents are empowered and feel like they're positively contributing to the education of their children. And it's so easy for us to just say, we'll do it all.
Yeah.
But that's not the goal, because our students go back home and it's important that they see their parents as the people who have the information to support them through that process. And we're doing a better job of that. We're not where we want to be, but I'm so excited about the fact that we're making that a priority, especially as our students become first-generation college students. That means that's a whole additional experience that their families haven't experienced. And it's important to me and to us as an organization that their parents still contribute through that process and feel as though they can have something to say and they have insight to offer to their children, because we've supported them in making sure that they feel informed through that process.
Yeah, it seems to me there are two directions, two misdirections that you can go into very easily. One is do it all for them. Mm-hmm. The other is, well, why aren't their parents doing it all? And of course, we got to that without the experience, without having been to the university yourself. It might be a little difficult to anticipate what to do. And so there are these two kind of misguided paths, and trying to find the middle ground, of course, is the goal. So I want to hear how you got there. We left, your parents were, they had gone back to the Ivory Coast, and you're still here, and you were here with your older sister and living with your uncle at the time, right? At a certain point, you lost your uncle. Tell us about that and what happened, and then what happened to you.
Yeah, that was another, I think, turning point in life. I don't know why I'm so fascinated by clothes, but remember what I was wearing the day that I heard that my uncle had passed away. It's like 5 a.m. in the morning. The police came and knocked on the door. I think my aunt opened the door, went to the door. I believe they said, your uncle has expired. I don't really know what that means in that context. It's like, what do you mean? My uncle has expired. He was in Texas. And then they told us what happened. And I vividly remember, like, my aunt being clearly very distraught. She was expecting at the time their third child. Both of my cousins were very young. One was 5 and one was maybe 1.5. And so I remember calming her down, making phone calls to all of my family, letting them know what happened. And then I remember taking a shower and going to school, like getting on the bus and going to school. And I don't even think I cried, and I didn't say anything. And I just went through the day, and then I randomly cried during my French class. Until my uncle, what the story was, my uncle was in Texas, got lost, went to a house looking for help. Wonderful man, like the softest man you will ever meet. Incredibly kind, very jovial, good to everyone he ever met. And was shot. In Texas, you are allowed to shoot people who are on your property. And so that happened. Self-defense is what was claimed. And he passed away. I was 15. And I think at that moment, recognized that was also a turning point. But I think at that moment became more aware of the need for me to take control of my life and thinking about how do you make decisions moving forward that put you in a position where you are not necessarily at the mercy, but where the future of your life is in someone else's hands. And I think that my parents' education was always really important to us, but I don't think it became personal until that moment. I think that experience made me realize that the decisions that I was making every day about doing my homework or not doing my homework and being a stellar student had direct consequences for my future. Mm-hmm. And so I think I decided at that time that my path to sustainability and to stability was to become a great student, to get a great college experience and a great degree that was marketable, and then for me to be able to build the life that I wanted that was stable for myself and hopefully for my siblings and other members of my community.
Your uncle was a truck driver, right? Mm-hmm. He was driving a truck through Texas. So he was working, got lost, and on this property. So the lesson you draw from this is I need to take control, and I need to sort of improve and make sure I take every opportunity to improve myself. Did you become aware, or had you become aware already, of the kind of racial divisions in this country that may have led to?
For sure. I mean, I think that growing up, my parents, I think, maybe Pan-Africanist, if you would call them that, always talked about those things. And so I think that was part of my upbringing to be aware. I think it became personal at that moment. But I think I also recognized that in that moment, I didn't have the luxury to harp on that. I could be angry at the fact that a white man shot my black uncle in Texas, and I could wallow in that, and I could be really upset. I could also make some decisions about my life so that I could get to a place where I was stable, and then I could entertain well, we live in a society where, because my uncle is a tall black man, he's perceived as a threat. And I think that something that is really personal to me. I don't think about it every day actively, but I have a lot of young males who are my students who I care about very deeply. And I worry for my young male students. You know, when we were just in New York with some of our students visiting colleges, and I'm concerned about who's talking to them and what do they perceive of them and what are they wearing and what are people saying about them or thinking about them when our students are bright and they're going places and they have the right to self-expression. And when we're walking down the streets of New York, they're allowed to be funny and to make jokes. That's okay. But I recognize that they live in a world where, unfortunately, they don't have those luxuries. The world is putting a lot of pressure on them to be a particular way in order to say that they have potential and they have dreams and they have visions. And so I think that experience with my uncle certainly makes me more protective of our students, especially of our male students, but also makes me ever the more, I think, committed to having conversations about I think it's important to come talk about race issues in beyond a place of anger. Anger never allows us to create communities where we can change things. It's important to say, here are the experiences that I have had with racism. Here are the ways that I have felt. Here are the things I recognize were not intentional, but are still part of how I felt about whatever happened. Mm-hmm. What can I do to ensure that, one, you can learn from me and always sees me as someone who's excited about your own growth and development, that path. But what can we do together to make sure that our students, the generations that come after us, do not have to experience this, but we can create spaces where we can be honest about what we know and what we don't know. We can be honest about our fears. We can be honest about our challenges. And I think it's also important for me to recognize, and I always say this, that I have a black skin, so when I walk around, people see me as an African-American. That I'm not. I'm African. I'm a foreigner. My life experiences are very different. And so there are limits to my own understanding of the racial history in America that I haven't internalized as others because I'm a foreigner. And I think sometimes that puts people at ease to recognize that in these conversations, I'm not an expert. I'm still able to learn, and I have a lot to learn. There's a lot I don't know, but that matters, and it's important that we can have those conversations.
I'm talking with the high school program director of Student U on the state of things. Alexandra Zagbayu is my guest. You were on your own at that point when you lost your uncle and with your sister. She went to NC State, mm-hmm. And I guess you kind of went with her, huh?
Mm-hmm. So I lived with my aunt for a year, and then maybe not even. My uncle died November 23rd, and maybe by the following September, my sister and I moved in together, and, you know, my parents are certainly my heroes and have taught me so much, but they're not enough words that I could use to express my gratitude towards my sister. I mean, she, incredibly smart, the hardest working woman I've ever met, incredibly smart, incredibly humble. I think I recognized at that point that I needed to make decisions to be able to create a stable life for myself. I think she recognized at that point that she had a responsibility to make a stable life for the both of us. This is probably really bad on air. And so we lived together, and she went to school every day, and she made sure that I didn't have to work. I didn't work through high school. She paid for everything. She helped me with my college application process. I went through a phase my senior year where I told myself that I was taking a gap year and not going to college and didn't want to apply. And she was like, "You're crazy. You are applying to college now." I did so reluctantly. God bless her for making me do that. And so I think she just took a lot of parenting role as a young child. We were 4 years apart. So she was probably, I was 15. She was 19 years old and did an amazing job. Now when I even counsel my students, I hear her voice in the back of my head. The little things, like I always tell my students, apply for everything, and then once you have options, then we can really have conversations about what you want to do, which she told me all the time about my college application process, about internships in college. And I found that so annoying. Like, it didn't make sense to me that I needed to apply to 10 internships when I really just wanted one. I think the concept of rejection had yet to hit me at that point. And now I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. And I tell all my students that. And I'm really aware that they think I'm also crazy when I tell them that. But I recognize that they'll learn one day. So my sister was really, I mean, has still, I think, has really high expectations of me. I don't know that I will ever meet her expectations of me, but I think that that's okay. I think she set them really high, and I'm really fortunate to have her in my life. And I hope that what she was able to do for me, I think my goal is that all of my students hopefully will feel similarly, that have high expectations of them, because I believe in them, even if in the moment they don't believe in themselves, because I think there were times when I didn't think she did,
We will talk more about how that program works when I talk with Alexandra Zegbayu, the high school program director at the Durham-based Student U. We'll find out more about that program and how things are going just ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Today I'm talking with Alexandra Zegbayu, high school school program director for a Durham-based program called Student U. We're going to get to talk about that in more in detail, but you did go. You took your sister's advice reluctantly and ended up going to college. So you can tell us where you went and how things went, because at a certain point in college, you began to see what you had been through. Tell us about that.
So I went to UNC Chapel Hill, best decision of my life. Former Duke fan, it was a bit of a transition to get used to the Carolina Blue, which now I love. Great decision, great school. Loved my time at UNC. The first year was rough. The first year I felt very uncomfortable there. I felt as though my life experiences were very different to that of the people that I was surrounded by. And I think that's probably true of most people, having lived the life that I have, but just couldn't find the right space for me to occupy, to feel as though I had something to contribute and something to gain. And then I became connected with the APPLES program at UNC, stands for Assisting People Planning Learning Experiences. I'm in service, and then I think started to find myself.
What was that program about? What did you do?
So the APPLES program is designed to help students connect what they're learning in the classroom to community work, to give them hands-on experience to continue to inform their education. And a big pillar of APPLES is thinking about how community service should be a mutually beneficial experience. And so the students who are doing the service should understand that they have something to learn from the community in which they are working, and that we have a skill set that we bring to the community, but that also the decisions within the community should be led by the community members who are living and experiencing the issues that we're working to support. And I think that for me was really important to problematize my understanding of community service, which I hadn't been pushed to do before. And then I think why the APPLES experience was also really important was because I had great mentors. And I think as someone, again, who had that void of not having my parents there and had a sister that I love dearly who gave me lots of advice, but also recognized that I sometimes didn't listen, was more likely to listen to a stranger telling me things that my sister was telling me at home. And so in Leslie Parkin found someone who was able to say, like, do this, don't do that. I see that you're really great at this. You should take more responsibility here. I want you to think about this opportunity. And that was really important for me to have someone that could do that for me. And then create the spaces where they, you know, where they felt very strongly that students had a voice and that we needed to use that for the betterment of our community. One of the experiences that was really meaningful to me during my college experience is working in a program in New York City the summer before my junior year. I taught African dance classes in the city. My sister lived then in the city because she worked for Goldman Sachs. And through that experience teaching dance, which I had done my whole life, dance had always been for me a space where I felt like I could be the most authentic version of myself, didn't need to talk or explain anything to anyone, and always felt a sense of refuge and peace in a dance room on a stage. And so being able to teach dance was, I think, very therapeutic for me, but also learning about the lives of the students that I was working with. They were often displaced, or students who were homeless, and for the first time recognized that some of my life experiences mirrored that of my students, and also started to realize how fortunate I had been. I think up to that point, felt a certain amount of, I'm so different, I've had such a hard life, why am I always the victim? And I think seeing the other side of that, students who were experiencing similar things I had experienced, and being able to say, but it gets better, but you're brilliant, but you're so smart, I can help you on your path to becoming who you want to be, you are worthy of love. You have all of these things within you. I see this vision for your life. And for a lot of them, some students who couldn't see past what they were going through and being able to relate to that, to feel as though the walls are closing in and there's no way this is ever going to get better, I think was incredibly important to me. I think it became my own healing process. The opportunity for me to recognize that all of those experiences weren't in vain, that I could use that as fuel and a constant reminder that there are children in this world who deserve pathways to becoming who they want to be, and I could help create the pathway for students to become who they want to be and be able to speak to that from a place of knowing. I don't have to reach very far to be able to relate to my students, and that, I think, was a turning point for me to say that working within my community wasn't something that I was going to do after I got rich on the weekends, but that I found this work to be really fulfilling and really healing and being a place where I felt like I could be authentic and could be vulnerable and help build bridges for my students of where they were and where they could be.
It's interesting to think about where you were, too. The idea that you might find a similarity that surprised you a little bit, but what you had in common was this displacement that can make things difficult for you. But then to notice, perhaps, that you had a support system that up until then maybe you hadn't noticed, and it becomes obvious when you see kids who are a lot like you with all the same talent and potential without that support system and think, oh, here's what's missing.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, I'm so incredibly fortunate. I mean, I always tell people that, you know, I have a family, but I have so many families at this point. Sometimes I wonder if I get married, how that's going to work, because I have so many people who consider me their adopted daughter and their cousin and whoever. And that's incredible, from my sister to my college mentors to the guidance counseling staff at my high school, who were incredible. I mean, I see my, you know, Mr. Case, who was a dean of students, and my high school guidance counselor, Miss Young, and some teachers at that school. Really, I couldn't have done this without them. And I was at my high school a few weeks ago, and I sat with my high school guidance counselor and just thanked her for what she did for me. I think that they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself at the time.
And when you taught the dance program, this dance class, were you an undergrad at the time?
I was. I was a junior in college.
What were you thinking? Did you have a plan for yourself at that moment? What you were going to do?
I still wanted to be rich, so I was trying to figure out, are you going to law school after this? The reason why I got to that program is because they paid really well. So I was getting paid $30 an hour. It's like, $30 an hour, I will teach whatever you want me to teach. Dance, that is great. But never did I go into it with the thought of, this experience might also change your path. I think what I recognized during that time and then other experiences that I had my junior year was that I was good at this and this mattered to me, and that it was important for me to make future life decisions about where I wanted to be, about something that I loved passionately, that I couldn't see myself waking up every day to do something that I didn't enjoy. And I recognized in that moment that my passion for working with youth wasn't going to be fulfilled by just volunteering on the weekend, that I needed to think about, was I going to be a principal? Was I going to be a teacher? And then I came to StudentU and found the perfect environment to be all the things that I wanted to be and none of the things that I didn't want to be.
How did you get connected with StudentU in the first place?
Through an Apple's internship.
Uh-huh.
So I came, and I think that's also an interesting story. So when you apply to Apple's, you apply for the internship and then three different internship placement. StudentU was my last choice. My first choice was to work for the Southern Coalition for Justice. And so I interviewed and I thought I had a great interview. Certainly they were going to move my name to all three of my choices. And then they only recommended me to StudentU and I was really upset about it. And then later on, I found out that the young lady who interviewed me, Radhika, had worked at StudentU, and when she interviewed me, felt strongly that I needed to be here and work with our students. And so, in a way, she blacklisted my application. She didn't pass me to anyone else and just sent my name to StudentU. And then I interviewed with Dan Kimberg, the executive director. And once I interviewed, I felt good about it. I remember it's the first time that I cried in an interview in my life. Thought it was really unprofessional. Certainly, they would never give me the job. That was 5 years ago.
Wow. And I'm still here. Give us the history of StudentU. Tell us more about it.
So StudentU is a college access program here in Durham. Started as a collaboration between three college students, Dan Kimberg, Amanda, now Kimberg, and Mary Williams, as well as the Durham Public School, Durham Academy UNC, Duke, and Central, the goal being to support students in order to ensure that they go to college. When Student U started, we were going to be a middle school only program at a time when DPS was wanting to do more early intervention to increase dropout rates and graduation rates in Durham. And so thought that if we could get students in middle school and get them excited about their education and give them the skills that they needed, that we can then ensure that they would go on to high school and graduate and go to college.
Right.
When our older students were getting ready to transition in high school, they felt very strongly that we should carry them through high school and make sure that they actually went to college. And so we listened and we did. And now that they're getting ready to start their freshman year of college, which is crazy.
Oh, is this the first group then?
The first group that graduated May 18th. It was a beautiful day. Recognize that we've done great work, but there's a lot of work that lies ahead of us. Statistically, only 11% of low-income students who go to college will graduate. We're so fortunate that all of our students have graduated and are on their way to college.
But 100%.
The goal is 100%.
Wow.
The goal is that 100% of them will graduate from college. Mm. And so the next 4 years are going to be big for us. They're very important. We need to make sure that we support our students well and that 100% of them graduate. And then I will breathe a little easier.
Who are your students? How do they get into the program?
So students apply in fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
They can self-nominate. We also work with all of the Durham public schools at the elementary school level to send all the information about the program. You fill out an application. You come in for an in-person interview. We then use a lottery to get classes between 50 and 55 students. And then we work with the same students until they graduate. Our students are 88% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. 83% of our students will be the first ones in their families to go to college. Our population right now is almost 50% African-American, 50% Latino. About of that number, a good number of our students come from homes where English is the second language. All of our students, I think the most important marker is students who have potential. So a student that a teacher or guidance counselor believe this student can succeed if they have the right support. Those are the students we're looking for. We're not always looking for straight A students who are going to be fine without us. We're looking for students that someone says they could be great. They are great. They're going to succeed, but they're going to do that so much. They're going to succeed at a high level if they had the support. And so those students come to Student U, and I get the pleasure of working with them once they turn.
I'm talking with the high school program director of Student U on the state of things. Alexandra Zagbayu was dragged kicking and screaming into the program, but eventually it was the thing that she always wanted to do, I guess. It is interesting how you get channeled by all these folks who you think are working against your best interest, and there you are. The kids, what do you think accounts for their success, 100% graduation rate versus an average of 11%, right, from the population that you're working from? That's pretty good. I mean, what's going on? And, of course, as you said, there has to be some home support. It's not just the kids. So the parents are behind them as well.
Mm-hmm. So 100% graduation rate from high school, Durham Public School, 72.5 graduation rate when you're thinking about low-income students. I think credit certainly comes from home. Their parents have set the expectations from a young age that we're going to excel academically. I think that matters. I think also creating cohorts and a community of people where our students feel comfortable trying new things, taking on new challenges, and a community of people where they recognize that in trying new things, sometimes they might fail, but that they have a community of people there to support them. I think that matters for them to be able to lead to their success. I think also thinking about the structure that Student U tries to put in place for students, especially in middle and high school. So you think about having an after-school program where you see your students every day. That matters, a place where they can come and focus on their academics. When you think about high school, they have advocates, so people who we hire to support them and meet with our students every week to ensure that their academic success is actually being realized, and that when there are concerns that there's a team there to think with not just the student but the family about what can we do, how can we intervene to support the students. And these concerns don't just have to be academic, right? We also recognize that we work with students who have lives and who may have things happening that are also influencing their academic performance, and they have a team of people there to support them. I think that matters. I think thinking about it's hard to work for something if you don't know where what you're working for, where you're going. Our students will visit upwards of 25 colleges by the time they graduate. I think that matters. When I applied to UNT, I think I had seen 3 schools. By the time they applied to school, they understand what a college campus is like. They know what they like. They know what they don't like. They know that every summer we're going to have conversations about which of these schools do you want to apply to and why. I think that matters, being able to see a path to where you could be and understanding what you need to do in order to get there. But I think, again, the families and the students themselves, they've worked really hard to graduate from high school, and I would never want you to take that credit. That is their work. Mm. We were there to be a part of their journey, but they deserve all the credit for their success.
Going forward, I've got about 30 seconds left for this answer, but you're in new territory now. You're going to support students through college. You really haven't done that yet. What's the plan? How do you do that?
30 seconds is a very short period of time.
Right.
So I'll tell you, the first thing we'll do is in August, we'll see all of our students for an overnight retreat where we're going to celebrate their successes. Mm. And then we're going to talk about the next 4 years are going to be important and start developing individualized plans for them to get into college and to succeed through college. And then I'll be visiting them in the fall. They'll get mentors to support them through that process. We'll sit with them with their academic advisors. So we're going to be with them every step of the way, recognizing that they also need more independence. You are now in college and you need the space to try new things and to make mistakes. But student, you will continue to be that support system. When you don't know what to do, we're going to be there to make sure that not just our students, but their families, again, have the information and the support they need to make the decisions that will lead to a graduation within 4 years.
It's going to be in a whole new environment for those families, too. I mean, they've all been through high school, but this is, as you say, some of these kids are they're the first ones to go to college, right?
It will be a whole new experience. But I think what's beautiful about Student U is we are a family, right? And so at this point, their families trust us to be able to care for their students, and we, again, are prioritizing making sure that their families have the information they need to make those decisions for them moving forward. And I think that brings in a certain amount of comfort to know that we'll be going to visit them. We have funds available to help families go visit their children on their college campuses. We're creating a parent university program for their parents to make sure that they have a space to talk about what they're experiencing with their students. And so are going to be very intentional about making sure that they are experiencing this for the first time, but with a community of people to support them through that process.
Alexandra, what a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexandra Zegbayu, high school program director for the Durham-based college access program called Student U. You can find out more about that organization at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Megan Modafferi, Anita Rao, and Will Michaels. Our intern is Charlie Shelton. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, the news director, and North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.